All right, time for Truth About Markets USA with Max and Stacy on GCN Network. Hello again, Stacy.
Max Kaiser, hello. What's going on this week?
Well, of course, you've got the BP oil geyser is a big, big story. And I wanted to spend this first segment of the show comparing the BP oil geyser and the risks and the the contamination, and compare it to what's happening in the banking sector. You know, something we've been talking about, but I think it bears repeating. You've got the oil geyser on the floor of the Gulf spewing pollution and creating ecological devastation. But you've also got these banks on Wall Street that have been spilling risk in the form of toxic securities, collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps into the financial environment, causing economic devastation. And they are both tied at the hip through a corrupt central banking system, which allows for both of these entities to spew pollution into their respective environments, BP into the Gulf with its oil spill, and banks like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan spilling risk into the financial environment, which has had the devastating consequences of the sharp rise in unemployment, the housing crash, the market volatility, all the scandals and insider trading and market manipulation. So anyway, these two, I think, are part and parcel of the same, basically the same problem.
Well, that's correct. And I noticed actually that Tony Hayward
spoke
before Congress this past week. And he seemed to have been coached by the same people who coached Goldman Sachs, because, you know, they're saying Tony Hayward stonewalls Congress. Hayward, who had been carefully coached by legal and media teams, frustrated the committee with his lack of candor. Apparently, he just kept saying, I don't recall, I don't know, and failed to recall anything.
Yeah, and they're handled by the same media training people. These executives at these banks and these oil companies and the Fortune 500 are recruited by the same recruiting companies. What's the name of the one? Heidrick and Struggles or something. I don't have the name off the tip of my tongue, but there's four or five major recruiting companies, and they all are interchangeable. They're plug and play. You know, they all fit into each other's corporations and boards. They're all in each other's banks, and they all are coached to say the exact same thing. And the underlying trend, the big trend here, is a return to the Middle Ages, basically, as all of the rights and economic gains of the Enlightenment that started with Adam Smith and the folks in Europe back in the 1770s and 80s and 90s are being given back, because the same aristocrats, the same entrenched monopolists and monarchs are saying enough is enough. We want our monarchy back. We're tired of this middle class mucking things up for us, getting in our way. We want to get from point A to point B. We don't want anybody in our way. And they're very successful now in completely turning back the clock and going back to a world where 99% of the population are serfs, 1% are kings. It's an indentured peonage. And they're well down that path.
So one of the things, both the oil industry and the finance industry, to relate these two together, how they we find ourselves in a toxic spill of financial derivatives that continue to blow up. And it's quite clear that the bankers themselves have no way of understanding how to stop it. And the same thing with the oil spill. There's a spill going on that they themselves have no idea how to stop it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good analogy there. So, in other words, the BP oil geyser blows up. It starts to spew oil. They throw golf balls at it. They throw junk, the so-called junk shot. They throw concrete in there. They keep throwing stuff in there, and nothing seems to stop the spew. Okay, let's go back to the financial world. As of 2007, all of these hedge funds and structured bond products started to blow up. And what do they do to try to stem the avalanche of bad credit? Is they throw more fiat currency at it. They print up more money, essentially, and they throw in more debt, because all money is based in debt. So they keep increasing the debt to try to stop the debt problem.
But they created these concentrated risk moments and locations, like whether it was Wall Street or out in the Gulf of Mexico, by arguing that to stop them from doing it was socialism, that you've got to be a free market capitalist and let them do this. But now in both situations, whether it was the banking blow up or now the BP oil spill, is that our politicians are insisting that the only that is true free market capitalism if we, the taxpayer, bail out these people and pay for their mess. We paid for the financial toxic spill. And now we're being asked by, you know, there were when Tony Hayward and the other chief executives of BP were in front of Congress this week, we had a Republican senator saying, apologize to the COO, saying, you know, I'm so embarrassed that, you know, we're even asking you to pay for any of this. He's saying that, you know, Obama was threatening him and made BP set aside $20 billion. In the meantime, an article on the Telegraph in the UK says that the oil spill could cost 100 billion pounds. That's $150 billion.
Uh-huh.
And now a Republican senator is apologizing to BP, saying, I'm sorry we asked you for $20 billion. You know, but we'll cover the remaining $130 billion, us taxpayers, my taxpayers of America, that I can force to pay for on your behalf.
Right. And I think it's important for people to understand how the mechanism is used to transfer the cost to the taxpayer. So they're saying $20 billion is the cost that they want to give to BP. And of course, now what will happen is this just means that BP will go to Wall Street and say, we need to expand our credit line by $20 billion. And as a matter of fact, within hours of the $20 billion assessment being, given to BP, the news was that BP is on Wall Street trying to sell $10 to $20 billion worth of new bonds to help buttress their balance sheet. Now, of course, to pay for the interest on the bonds, they're going to lower their operating standards. So this is, in fact, going to increase the chances of another one of these blowouts of their oil rigs, because they don't have the money to put in the security and the safety measures, because they're spending it on the interest payments on the money they need to borrow to pay off the $20 billion that they're being assessed for this problem. So just like the Exxon Valdez, if you recall, it was years and years and years later until they finally, after many, many legal challenges, coughed up a few bucks. But essentially, that money would came out of the pocket of those who had to pay off the environmental damage themselves, out of the basically what's called a taxpayer. But I think you have to, you know, there is no U.S. taxpayer anymore. You have peasants. Yes, it's true. You have American peasants, and then you have American lords. You don't have taxpayers because the debts are so huge in America. If everyone paid 100% of their income to pay off the debt load, they would still be paying it off in 20 years' time. I mean, there is no, the debts are 100 times greater than any possible expectation of collecting a tax on a tax revenue on income in America. So let's cut to the chase here. You've got peasants and lords. The $20 billion line is expanded, and it just exacerbates the problem because they never actually pay that $20 billion. They just borrow another $20
billion. Yeah, but it's also now, like you said, they're raising, they're selling some bonds to pay for this.
Yeah.
And now we know that the Federal Reserve Bank has announced and has over the past few years been taking any bonds as collateral. So basically, they're just going to take those bonds, sell them to the Federal Reserve, which then basically has Congress pay on your behalf anyway.
Right. The collateral for this paper, with every passing day, it turns out it's either non-existent or the equal in value to something that's non-existent. And this is contributing to the overarching economic theme of our era. And I speak, of course, about deflation. Deflation, what is it? Every time one of these things blows up, it causes a greater instability of the system and more deflation. So no matter how much money they pump into this thing, it's not having the effect of rising wages, rising economic activity, and rising prices in a meaningful way. What it is having the effect of is increasing instability and increasing the deflationary risk. We'll be talking more about that when we come back on The Truth About Market Magic. Don't go away. We're back. on the GCN Radio Network, Max and Stacey, Truth About Markets USA. We were talking about inflation and deflation, the fact that the big theme is deflation. And on that front, I got a chuckle out of something that Paul Krugman was writing about in the New York Times. Nobel laureate Paul Krugman saying, "What's wrong with Europe? Do they want to create another 1930s deflationary nightmare?" Okay, he made this comment because Europe is doing a stress test on their banks. They're going to really look at the bank's balance sheet and see what they really own, and then they're going to publish the results. So they're for transparency and accountability. And for this, Paul Krugman of the New York Times says that's a catastrophe. You can't have transparency. You can't have accountability because people might suddenly realize that the economy is deflating, and then people will stop consuming and borrowing, and we'll be right back to the 1930s.
Well, to go with this is a pincer move of this headline. This is truly remarkable. This shows you how we are actually being attacked by financial terrorists, and it genuinely is. ECB reads the headline, "Must buy hundreds of billions of bonds to tame Europe's debt crisis." This is a warning from Fitch. Fitch Ratings has warned that it may take massive asset purchases by the European Central Bank to prevent Europe's sovereign debt crisis escalating out of control. So Fitch, who works for the banks who own these bonds of Portugal, Greece, Spain, is saying that the ECB had better buy these, or they're warning of all-out spiraling disaster in Europe.
Yeah, the mechanism to perpetrate financial terrorism is multifold. So you have the outright crash of a market like we saw on May 6th during the first unequivocal domestic financial attack in America. But you also have what's going on with Fitch and the rating agencies. You know, for example, when Greece said that, you know what, we're going to impose an austerity measure and put our house in order, the rating agencies came out the next day and downgraded Greece. Why? On behalf of the hedge funds who were speculating against the Greek bonds. They're in bed with the hedge funds. They're in bed with the speculators. They're working with them hand in hand. They collude with each other. Their whole fee structure is based on collusion and market manipulation.
And these are the same people that pay for and put out propaganda saying that we run free market capitalism. You need to be free market capitalists. And we define what free market capitalism is. Just make sure you don't read Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, because this is you might know too much. So here's a quote from Brian Colton, the Fitch agency's head of sovereign ratings. He says, quote, "There has been an unwillingness to follow through." He's talking about the ECB and their $700 billion basically TARP fund. "And markets are going to want to see the ECB's money." Now, if some poor people or working people or some people in the Gulf of Mexico area, you know, if they wanted to see the market's money, the ECB's money or the Federal Reserve's money, they'd be called socialists, right? "It will require hundreds of billions, in my opinion," he told a global banking conference.
Yeah, well, the term socialism, capitalism, fascism, you know, they have completely lost their meaning because people toss them around, really, because the population has a cognitive bias. You know, they have a pre-hardwired response to words that usurps their normal path of thinking and logic, and they just react from the gut when they hear certain words, like Pavlovian dogs. And these words have no meaning anymore. They just throw them out there. And I was reminded this week, looking at the comments on MaxKaiser.com, somebody was saying, you know, Max Kaiser seems like he's for regulation and he's against free market capitalism. So they're saying that these two are mutually exclusive, that free market capitalism and regulation are mutually exclusive. Now, this is insane. You know, that's like saying another World Cup soccer matches or football, it's called in Europe, is going on. So you're saying Max Kaiser is for having referees on the field and he's against soccer. You see what I'm saying? If you're going to have a game, which is free market capitalism is essentially one big game, you need referees. You don't have referees. You don't have a game. You have basically anarchy. You just have gang. You have gang warfare. There's no referees when the Crips and the Bloods are battling each other in Compton. They're just shooting at each other. Now, for people who think free market capitalism are gangs armed with financial weapons of mass destruction shooting each other through the Forex markets, well, that's exactly what we do have, because there are no regulators, because the SEC and the FSA and the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve are in the pocket of the gangs, the street gangs, the Wall Street financial street gangs that are knifing each other with these weapons of mass financial destruction, as Warren Buffett calls them. And who's the loser? The savers, the workers, the pensioners. You know, it's not for nothing that British Petroleum, they decided, well, you know what? We're not going to take the hit for this $20 billion. Ostensibly that we have to go print up anyway in the basement over there in Wall Street, and we're never going to pay anything. But you know what? We will cut the dividend to those folks who rely on the dividend for their pensions. Yeah, they'll take the hit. You know, old granny and grandpa, they're going to take the hit. We're not going to take the hit. No executive firings, no reorganization of the company, no financial penalties. Just take grandpa and grandpa out off onto the plank, have them walk the plank, and jump into the sea of destitute. That was their problem. That's their solution over there at BP. Now, yeah.
So the situation we have now is, they call it regulatory capture. Yeah. It's a very nice word for bribing and fraud, basically, because it's the equivalent of, you know, say, well, America versus England just recently in the World Cup this week. If one side had owned the referee. Yeah. And the referee said, oh, no, you scored a goal, America. But you know what? That England capped the goalie. Well, he made a mistake. So we're going to say that was illegal. We're gonna overturn that goal you just made.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly right. Regulatory capture. They own the referees and they make the rules as they go up. You know, when I was working on Wall Street, the saying was, go ahead and break the law because we have plenty of lawyers. And never assume that you're breaking the law. Always assume that the law needs to be rewritten. So never assume that you ever do anything wrong. You have to understand that these laws, these security laws, are in flux. Because we're so smart on Wall Street, we're creating so many of these exotic financially engineered products, the law is behind the curve. So we just have to keep going forward and let the law catch up. And when they catch up, you'll be exonerated. Because after all, we're doing God's work on Wall Street, as somebody said on Wall Street. And the small people, as was referred to by the chairman of BP, we talked about the small people in Louisiana and America that are getting crushed by his toxic, ecological, Holocaust-provoking act of eco-terrorism. The small people.
He said he and Obama spoke about this and that they both agreed. And he said it three times. We care about the small people. We really do. We care about you people outside our moats.
Isn't that grand? That he cares about the small people. I'm so relieved that the chairman of BP has a concern for the small people. Well, it's outrageous, of course, and the kleptocracy is gaining strength in America, and unfortunately, all the politicians in Washington are on the inside and refuse to stand up to the people. And what can I say other than this is The Truth About Markets USA with Max and Stacy. And we're going to be back after this message, so don't go away here on GCN Radio Network. And when we come back, much more coming your way. We're back. Truth About Markets USA on GCN Radio Network. Yeah, baby. So anyway, let's talk about this one if you want to. I don't know. So, I'm so...
Speaking of financial terrorism. By the way, I want to make a note of the fact that... I forget which congressman, which senator apologized to BP, but it reminded me of when George H.W. Bush, President George H.W. Bush, said that America doesn't apologize for anything. When the Iranians demanded an apology for the fact that the USA shot down a passenger airline.
Yeah.
Very few people recall this situation, but they shot down an Iranian passenger plane, killing over 100 citizens, civilians, passengers. And the U.S. has still refused to apologize for that. But here you are with an act of eco-terrorism, of financial terrorism, of of terrorism in the Gulf, and you already have a senator apologizing to British Petroleum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's disgusting. You know, it's just disgusting to get on your knees and beg forgiveness from your British overlord right there in Congress. I mean, is there no shame? Anyway, so here we've got some updates on the 9/11. Dun, dun, dun. Now, oh boy, here we go. So I've been following this this entire 10-year period, basically focused on one thing and one thing only. The actions, the trading of put options on the airline stocks immediately preceding the attacks of 9/11. The volume on those put options was 25 times greater than normal volume. And the imbalance of puts to calls was 80% for puts, 20% for calls, which is a very high concentration of negative bets on 25 times normal volume. Usually, this is exactly what you see right before an announcement of a takeover, and the options market reflects inside information. When regulators try to figure out who was trading on inside information, they look at the options market. There's a thing on Wall Street called StockWatch. It's a group. It's like a little sleuth group on Wall Street looking for insider trading. And they look at the options. They look at volume. And they look at price. And when you see 25 times normal volume and huge prices and spike in price and huge imbalances of put-to-call ratio, this is usually a telltale sign of insider trading. So that we saw the exact same thing leading up to the 9/11 attacks on the airline stocks that all made millions and millions of dollars in profits based on insider information on those attacks. Now, we have a little update. David Callahan, who's the executive director of Smart CEO Magazine, which I believe is actually published somewhere around Baltimore, Maryland, where former headquarters of Alex Brown and Son, which was taken over by Deutsche Bank, the brokerage firm that handled these option trades. He has submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the SEC regarding the 9/11 put options. And the letter that he got back was startling, and he writes about it in the August edition of Smart CEO Magazine. Basically, what he was told was that all that information has been destroyed.
The SEC wrote back to him and said that the government destroyed those documents.
Right.
Relates to those pre-9/11 put options in American Airlines and United. It was just those two airlines that had massive shorts on them.
That's right.
Or puts, as they call them.
Right. That's right. And the information was destroyed. And, you know, this is unusual to say the least. It wasn't as though they had some other alternative explanation for the huge anomalies in the option market, like there was some kind of hedging strategy being put on.
Well, the 9/11 Commission report says, oh, we looked into this. They do mention it in the 9/11 Commission report. And they say, we looked into it. It was, they reckon the extreme options were abnormal. And remember, United and American do have an option record going back decades. So mm-hmm. they were able to see it was a drastic anomaly. And they blame it on a newsletter that recommended people short these two stocks. And they said it was a legitimate firm through which the bets were placed, meaning Alex Brown. They failed to mention in the 9/11 Commission report that Alex Brown had been run for several decades by the number three man at the CIA, Buzzy Krongard, who had moved to the CIA under George Bush.
That's right. He was in the CIA office, moving from Alex Brown to the CIA. He was deputy director under George Tenet. And there's tremendous overlap between we know that a lot of the hedge funds that buy U.S. government bonds to help to support the U.S. government bond market are hedge funds that are registered in the Cayman Islands. And there's a lot of study research in terms of the owners and the backers of these hedge funds being U.S. intelligence agencies that are buying these bonds to help support the bond market. So the markets and the intelligence services and Alex Brown in Baltimore, Maryland, which is right near Washington, D.C., George Tenet, Buzzy Krongard. There's tremendous overlap going there. Now, my feeling has always been from really the day after 9/11 is that there was a sufficient amount of information circulating on the desks and in the research notes of these brokers and insiders, enough to commit millions in buying these put options, speculating on the collapse in a sufficient amount of time that would have warranted, considering these are intelligence officials, a closer examination of what was happening. And in my opinion, had the motive to protect people been greater than the motive to profit from this inside information, those attacks would have never happened. But because those folks had a profit motive that usurped their people motive, they simply looked the other way. The trade became too juicy. Mm-hmm. Because when you're buying options for, you know, 25 cents an option that have the ability to go to $20 or $30 an option in a matter of days, the windfall profits are spectacular. Now, that I am absolutely assured of, and that's what I call the green information. Then there's the yellow information, which is kind of, you know, not as well, you know, it becomes a bit hazy. And then there's the red information, which is behind firewalls, which we just don't have access to. But that is my green information, that there was enough information that could have, the insiders, the people involved, could have stopped this thing in advance. But simply their motivation, and this is part and parcel of the motivation throughout the U.S. economy. It's the motivation for the oil companies not to put in adequate protection to their drilling in the Gulf, which leads to eco-holocaust, eco-terrorism.
But look at Goldman Sachs and Tony Hayward himself. They both dumped massive amounts of stock in BP just before the explosion. And of course, they knew that the well had failed critical safety tests.
Yes, right.
And it was from high up, and there's now more and more email documentation and evidence emerging that senior executives at BP ordered the drilling to continue, even though there were people from Transocean, from Halliburton, like getting into near fistfights on the platform saying, like, this is a dangerous situation. Halliburton, there's an email that says, you know, they were strongly wording that there was a disaster likely to happen because of I guess BP only used something like 3 casings rather than 20 that Halliburton was recommending. And they were saying this is a really dangerous situation to put yourself into.
Yeah. And the way it works in the economy now with people on the inside who have access to virtually unlimited amounts of money with very little cost, you know, they're being charged interest rates that are fractional percentage points. It's very easy to put on a trade where you're buying huge quantities of out-of-the-money options. Okay, so let's say you're an insider at BP, and you have a pretty good insight into the fact that this company is skating very thin ice and could potentially create a huge, massive problem. Well, what you do is you simply take some of the money that you're making trading on inside information, and you're putting some of that money to work on what is effectively a lottery ticket. Let's say you put $50,000 or $100,000 on a out-of-the-money put. And I'm going to get into this in greater detail when we come back from this break. Okay, so we're back. Max and Stacey, Truth About Markets USA on GCN. Yeah, so I was talking about lottery tickets and options and if you have an inside information and you're a big company like BP or the oil industry as a whole, you take some of the money that you're collecting as a monopolist and colluding with other industry brethren, and you put some of that money to work on an out-of-the-money option. Let's say the price of BP is at $50 a share, and the put options that the stock might at some point in the next 9 months trade for $20 a share, you can buy an option that might be trading at 10 cents. Now, you can buy thousands of those for very little money. If there's a catastrophe, and in fact, the stock goes from 50 down to 30 or $20 a share, that 10 cents becomes 30 or $40 a share. Now, that's an incredible windfall in a very short period of time. You know, the whole strategy of the so-called Black Swan Fund by Taleb Nassim, basically what he does is he has a huge portfolio with some income generated in some passive investments like corporate bonds, and he takes the income and he buys out of the money options on a variety of scenarios and just sits back and waits for a catastrophe.
But you could provoke them as well, whether either you know insider information, like there were no options, as far as I know yet, on the BP spill because they couldn't know the exact date. They did know that their own rig failed, their own well failed the safety test. But with the 9/11 attacks, they had Moussaoui in custody 4 days before the event. And lo and behold, that's when the put options were placed. Who knows about that? But if you look at the past week alone, okay, we know the flash crash of May 6th, but look at the last week. You had Diebold. It crashed, 34, 36% in the course of 2 minutes, 1 minute?
Mm-hmm.
Washington Post, the price of that doubled in a matter of minutes,
mm-hmm,
on another day.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went back to where it was. And same with Diebold, went back to where it was. Now, aren't these events that are just triggering options and you know, program trading? And
yeah, this did generate huge profits. And this gets into another area then, provoking the events,
yeah,
which is different than just waiting for the events. And this is what I call the yellow information. So in the case of 9/11, whether the attacks were provoked by the same people who were benefiting in the inside information, those details are less documented. But in the case of other incidents, like the flash crash of May 6th, that was clearly a provoked crash, a financial terrorist attack, for the benefit of a few insiders. The two instances that you just mentioned, Diebold and Washington Post, clearly, given the incredible volatility in this short period of time and the options trading around it, this would be a provoked domestic financial terrorist attack for the benefit of a few insiders. And these are getting greater and greater. The only way to stop it from happening is to raise the cost of capital so that it's expensive actually to borrow money to speculate and provoke terror like this. But of course, if you raise the cost of capital, which means raising interest rates, you're going to kill any hope of any housing recovery or any hope of any GDP growth whatsoever. So they hold that over people's head and said, either you let us continue to provoke the markets and engage in financial terrorism, or we're going to raise interest rates and you're going to be on the street destitute. So that they got a perfect crime going here. People are willingly allowing the terrorists to operate for fear that they'll raise interest rates, which is the same as in the old days of having your head cut off.
Well, they also do that in this situation. They're saying, you know, even though this giant disaster in the Gulf, you know, we can't lose jobs, so we have to keep on doing it. We have to keep working for the terrorists. But they also, they're sending out propaganda now in the Wall Street Journal. J.P. Morgan is reporting that the Gulf oil spill will be good for GDP.
Right. That's another curious aspect of the way so-called capitalism, or what we call rigged market capitalism, operates in society, is that GDP growth includes something like 9/11 and the rebuilding of 9/11, the Gulf oil spill, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the prison industry.
The tsunami.
The tsunami, right. It's going to help the people more than hurt them. And so what you end up with is an economically engineered form of societally approved sadism. So the banks on Wall Street become sadists, where they convince you through CNBC and other outlets that by allowing them to commit acts of financial sadism and financial terrorism, that they are helping you. And it has been pointed out now more and more in the financial press in Europe and in the FT that this whole idea of Stockholm syndrome is becoming a bigger factor. People are afraid to tell the financial terrorists and the financial sadists to stop for fear that they will traumatize them again. So they lockstep fall in line and they say, please don't traumatize me. Please don't destroy my financial life again. Please don't spill another $400 trillion worth of toxic derivative risk into the derivative-osphere using credit default swaps and to totally destroy my life again. And so they become complicit. Not only do they become complicit, but they become active participants. And they encourage it because they don't want to suffer the pain again of 2008 or the flash crash of May 6th or the 9/11 financial terrorist attack or the BP eco-terrorist attack. So they just let it slide.
And What was I going to say? But they also, it's kind of like the Pavlov's dog thing. They train you. So here we have this BP oil spill and total devastation, both for nature, for jobs, you see the entire fishing industry is totally devastated. But then they tell you at the same time, they plant these messages that this is good for GDP. This is good for your economy. So it trains you that every time a disaster happens, you start to think this is good for the economy. And we saw that in The Corporation, that film, where the commodities trader guy,
mm-hmm.
who said his first instinct as soon as he looked up and saw the attacks on the World Trade Center, his first instinct was to jump up and cheer that he owned a lot of gold.
That's right.
So you're trained to instinctively respond to the opposite of what you should be feeling.
Yeah, you are psychologically redesigned by the markets to become basically supporters of algorithmic trading bots,
yeah.
that are programmed to destroy the meat economy, the flesh and blood economy, the real job economy. Now, think about those fishermen down in the Gulf. They're going to lose their jobs, and a lot of them will drift into day trading. So they will become day traders. They'll get an online discount brokerage account. They'll get a Bloomberg terminal, and they'll start trading stocks and bonds and options, and they become part of the problem because they'll be rooting for catastrophe as well. They'll be looking for the next 9/11 to happen because they're long or they're short some huge out-of-the-money put or call position. So they become a willing force in this army of financial terrorists. And this is another way to get bigger. And the people who are working for a living and saving for retirement are on the short end of the stick because they don't want to participate in financial terrorism. And yet they have no choice because the ecology breaks down. You've got no job. You end up in front of a trading terminal as a day trader. And now you're rooting for Al-Qaeda, which, I mean, at the end of the day, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan are rooting for Al-Qaeda because they...
Well, they are Al-Qaeda.
Well, exactly. They never made more money in their history. It's not a coincidence that these banks have never made bigger profits since the emergence of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has been the best possible thing for Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan. Their profits have never been bigger.
Well, of course, because Al-Qaeda is a fictional entity. It's created by the CIA, who works... We know now, I mean, very few Americans seem to care, but the CIA is actually allowed to work for these banks. So, yeah. You know, it's a fabrication. There is no Al-Qaeda for real. It's completely fabricated. It's fake. It's not real. It's fake.
That's right.
And yet, you know, these guys on Wall Street get to use them as a tool.
That's right. Al-Qaeda is basically cheese whiz. It's a synthetic product meant to simulate something, but in reality is nothing. Now, because it's been overused, like socialism, capitalism, and all these other phrases, there will soon need to be a new war, because they blew out war on drugs, they blew out war on terror, they blew out Al-Qaeda. They've got something new's got to come down the path. The war on somebody, and there's got to be a new group. And that'll be interesting to see how this takes form in the next few months to jolt the population into making more irrational decisions. They need to create a new boogeyman. Not exactly sure where it'll come from, what it'll be called, but I think the Al-Qaeda boogeyman is losing strength. People are just inured to that phrase now. It doesn't get them viscerally puking like it used to after the 9/11 days. They've got to come up with something new.
Well, they also have, it's the end of empire days like you had in the Colosseum in Rome where all sorts of gladiator games.
Yeah.
And you have the war on terror that's killed hundreds of thousands of people in Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, all over the, you know, basically Muslim world. We're killing lots of people for the entertainment of us. The war on drugs. Over 25,000 people in Mexico have been killed this year because of the war on drugs. And you know why? But apparently it's entertaining. The king gets to go up or down whether or not we want to send
more
troops.
That's going to do it.